I'm strapped to the outside of the Heidi rocket ship that's off to the moon.
AI agents everywhere, but a principled approach where the clinicians are able to deliver the right care, have access to the right information at the right time to help them and the patient make the right decision together.
If you're an EHR, you're writing an AI scribe. You want a piece of that.
2035. What is a patient journey like?
Going to go sit in the wellness chair that's going to take all of my biometrics. That'll be happening en route while I travel in my downtime, dead time.
Health is the final frontier.
We've officially entered the era of AI in healthcare. It's entering every part of the journey, from patients to clinicians, administration. It's no longer a question of if or when. It's more about how and where we are going to from here. Today, we're bringing you the second episode of the What the Health Wrap, brought to you with 10 Mile, who are building bold ventures for better health. And we're joined by two experts who are going to help us dive into the latest headlines and explore where exactly we're going with AI in healthcare. Building on the What the Health newsletter and community that's been running for 5 years, we're excited to bring you the video and audio form of your latest news and digest, and going beyond the headlines to figure out what's hype, what's actually signal, and what do you need to know about. I'm Emily Casey, founder of What the Health and head of community at 10 Mile. And today it's my absolute pleasure to be joined by two incredible OG What the Health is, dare I say it, Dr. Simon Koz, who is the Global Chief Medical Officer at Heidi Health and previously Global Chief Medical Officer at Microsoft, as well as Dr. Janice Tan, GP and Digital Health Leader, who's been across all facets of Australian digital health, and GM of Clinical Innovation at Bupa. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
And we're excited to have you both. Can you perhaps give us a little bit of a taste of what you've been up to over the last few weeks?
So I'm strapped to the outside of the Heidi rocket ship that's off to the moon. That's been incredibly busy professionally, but a lot of fun. And so for those of you who don't know, Heidi started as an AI scribe. This year we introduced multi-product and we're multi-geo. So nominally we're in 190 countries, but we've got a few centres of gravity like Europe, the US, Canada and Australia and New Zealand.
Hell yeah. And Janice?
Yeah. So look, I wear many hats, but first and foremost, I'm a GP. So in the last few weeks, I've just been continuing to use and thrive on AI scribes as part of my consults at the moment. Mm. Something I've been experimenting is I've been starting to use AI scribes to give my patients a summary of their consult as well. Nice. In the last few weeks, and they have been loving it as well, which is really goes to show how we can use clinician AI tools to help patients on the end as well. I also work for Bupa and as a GM of Clinical Innovation, and we are knees deep in rolling out and piloting different AI solutions across our different health services. So not just health insurance, but you know, things like our medical clinics, dental clinics, optical clinics, and also psychology clinics as well. So that's that too. And the last thing this week, actually, I also advise the RACGP, and I contribute a lot to helping uplift the digital health community in terms of the GP profession. And we ran a webinar where we got some of the top GP PMS, so patient management systems, to go and, you know, showcase their roadmap for the future. And you are going to bet that AI featured heavily in all of them.
Wow. That sounds like you're seeing healthcare from almost every angle at the moment, particularly across the Australian ecosystem, from on the ground with the patient up to how it works at the business end with insurers and even the legislation. That's a very cool view to have. And on the scribe, dare I ask, do you have a favourite scribe?
Oh, big question. I have multiple favourites at the moment. I do think that the top two scribes are of Australia, Heidi and Lyrebird, are pretty much making waves. Though I do have to say, lots of up-and-coming features out there. But it's starting, honestly, at this point in time, in 2026, it's starting to feel that scribe is more so a commodity. Much like an electronic medical record system. Say 3 years ago, it was like, oh my gosh, wow, scribe, AI in the consulting room. But right now, it's just kind of like, yeah, of course there's an AI scribe. What do you mean you're not using an AI scribe? So it's really interesting to see the evolution of the workforce as well when it comes to AI tools. And I think, you know, scribe is the entry point to a much brighter future with AI.
Completely. It's table stakes, and hopefully we'll delve into where we're going with it all today. But first, I might bring a bit of a summary of the What the Health Wrap and the five hottest headlines you should know about from the last fortnight. Heidi surveyed about 1,800 clinicians across 25 countries, finding 83% had already adopted AI before governance had caught up, which I don't think surprises any of us, while 73% believe AI could help extend their careers. OpenAI launched Health in ChatGPT, allowing people to connect health information from wearables and supported health apps, while revealing users are already asking hundreds of millions of health questions every week. OpenAI also announced Sheba Medical Center as its first international healthcare partner in Israel, signaling a deeper move into clinical workflows and healthcare infrastructure. Bupa is continuing to expand its connected care strategy, investing in primary care, urgent care, prevention, with insurers increasingly moving beyond healthcare and towards more longitudinal care as models and care evolves. And finally, Rock Health reported US $7.4 billion invested across 244 digital health deals, with almost 45% of all funding concentrated into just 19 mega rounds. There were plenty of other stories we could have covered today, but together I think these tell a really interesting story about where we're going in digital health, healthcare at large, and where AI ties in with where we're going. Healthcare isn't just adopting AI, but it's being redesigned around it. So today we're asking one simple question: what will the future of care actually look like? Let's jump in. Alrighty. Story one, coming back to Heidi's wonderful report, the Precious Points report. I think it's a really interesting snapshot and putting numbers behind what we've already been seeing, and I'm sure you've both experienced from the clinical side over many years with scribe adoption. But with this survey of 1,800 clinicians across 25 different countries, covering doctors, nurses, allied health professionals, it sounds like AI is being used day to day. It was happening before governance was put in place, and we can all see that governance is really struggling with keeping up. And the really interesting part I found is, I guess there's often a narrative in healthcare that the older generation are a bit of a blocker in some of these, I suppose, adoptions of new technologies, new care pathways. But this survey seems to show that it was actually the reverse, and they were the fastest adopters of it, and with a lot of belief from clinicians that it will extend their careers by reducing documentation burden. I think that's no surprise to anyone, but it's really an interesting report combined with other things. Like, I know, Simon, you recently did a review that was published on the effects of AI and a lot of other interesting research pieces coming out. So I suppose I'll throw it to both of you. What does this really signal about what we're seeing and where we're going in healthcare?
So I think we're in an unprecedented era. I think the last generation of rolling out digital health technology, which was largely infrastructure, has developed some myths that are worth busting. And so the first myth is clinicians are Luddites. The experience to date prior to the generative AI era is whenever there was a digital health initiative, clinicians were resistant, needed change management, they were vocal, and it was just tough work. And there's this dominant logic out there that clinicians just don't like technology. What this report has demonstrated and what we're seeing the world over is you get product market fit right and clinicians will jump at it, not just readily, but before governance exists. And that's the other thing. The need is so acute that clinicians are adopting ahead of readiness. So that's worth noting. The second myth that's worth busting is product-led growth is meant to be impossible in healthcare. That's a retail or consumer phenomenon. But here, we're finding that clinicians themselves ahead of their organisation are driving the trend. That's different. That's interesting. And the final thing I'll call out is there is this myth that all technology needs to be delivered through the electronic medical record interface because clinicians can only handle one screen. And if that was true, there would be no shadow AI. In fact, there has been shadow IT forever. Clinicians can handle at least two screens. And we're finding that some of the early adopters of Scribes are countries like New Zealand that doesn't even have an electronic medical record and they've rolled out nationally. So I love the fact that we're in this unprecedented era and we're adopting things fast that are making a difference.
Interesting. Janice?
Highly agree with that, mate. Like, I feel like when you say unprecedented era, like we need to start challenging what we thought we know was true. So first one, clinician and Luddites, you know, I'm a GP and, you know, so many times on, you know, the health tech community, you would talk about how GPs are like so technologically, you know, in advance. And I like to say that GPs are actually one of the most innovative professions out there. Imagine working in an environment where you're time constrained, resource constrained, and, you know, with rising patient expectations and for them to, you know, deliver the care that they can, that's innovation as well. So, and I also like to challenge the fact that, you know, clinicians can't use two screens. Where did that come from, Simon? And I do think that, you know, I used to work in software where, you know, they would obsess among the number of clicks the clinicians have to do as if that's the be all and end all of things. And again, I think that's another myth that this AI revolution continues to bust. Mm-hmm. It's not more so whether there's one or two screens or whether they need to log into a browser or, like, you know, click something three more times for it to happen. It's the value exchange that matters as well. And I think with AI scribes, you know, I've never seen a piece of technology light up so much in the GP world more than AI scribes. And I think that is amazing because that goes to show that it doesn't matter how many screens you're putting up. It doesn't matter how many extra clicks they need to do. If the value exchange is there for the GP, for the clinician to use an AI product or any tool, actually, they will use it.
I suppose, where do you both think this is taking general practice as a whole? I know we've had this conversation many times over the years, but it feels like every few months it changes and continues to. So where are we headed next?
So I think the future, and it's within 2 years, will be voice by default, enter of information. And that might have sounded radical until recently, but I think it's ridiculous that we've taken general practice, which is all about a clinician delivering care to a patient, and then we've put a laptop or a desktop in the middle and we've broken that interaction. I think that's the crazy thing. So we're going to go back to this natural user interface where technology is transparently in the background, ambiently collecting information. And rather than just passively collecting information, I think we're going to start to infuse decision-making knowledge and evidence into the flow. That's the next thing. So Janice mentioned that Scribe might be commoditized. I actually think it should be commoditized. It's the entry point. Then how do we actually build on that to improve? If Scribe is all about how do we make things more productive, we're just helping the current model. But how do we actually improve the model by making evidence-based practice a reality, improving decision-making, de-risking care? That's exciting.
Totally.
Well, two things that's exciting for me for primary care. The first one is not shorter consults. I mean, there are a lot of Scribe companies out there that talk about how much time they save the GP, how much time they save in consults. But it's not about shorter consults. It's about deeper consults, more meaningful consultations with your patients. I've been using a Scribe for about 3 years now in my practice, and I don't finish my 15-minute consults in 12 minutes. My 15-minute consults go for 15 minutes, sometimes longer, but the things I can cover is much deeper, much more complex. And the connection I have with the patient in front of me is much stronger because I don't have to worry about writing notes and putting in things as well. So what I do hope to see with the future with AI tools is like more present consults where there is true decision-making together with the clinician and the patient as well. The second thing that I'm excited about as well with this is that, yes, we mentioned that Scribe's that first step into an AI-enabled workforce as well. I do think it's starting to have a bit of a flywheel because we talk about product-led growth. Suddenly, startups like Heidi and Lyra can start seeing that if they focus on a good product that has, you know, that value exchange there, that would lead to increased adoption. And therefore, you get this flywheel between clinicians adopting new things and companies actually having the motivation and the, you know, the urgency to really, really delve into the workflow and see what else can be optimized with tools like AI.
Can we also address the fact that it's not just clinicians who have access to AI?
Oh, yes.
It's patients who have access to AI. So I'll tell you something interesting. We talk about what does the future of general practice look like. Best practice for using a scribe is to get consent. Hey, I'm using an AI note-keeping tool. Do you mind if I record the conversation? Patients are saying, I've actually got my own note-keeping app. Do you mind if I record the consultation? Interesting. This will normalise. But I think what's new and potentially game-changing is we've got this huge asymmetry of information between healthcare practitioners and organisations who have all of the knowledge and know what it means and patients who are a little disempowered and you've got to be the passive recipient of a paternalistic system that tells you what's wrong and what we're going to do about it. Now, with AI, you can put in something that might be quite complex and it'll break it down quite simply for you. That changes the dynamic of an interaction. So take that forward and project to where it goes. We're going to have far more informed patients coming through, and the traditional consultation might be more of a coaching discussion, especially for complex chronic disease where their own empowerment makes a difference.
Completely, which I think brings us really nicely to our next story in terms of being a patient partner. OpenAI has just launched health in ChatGPT. We all knew it was coming. We've all seen the move into more of a consumer-facing product given OpenAI and ChatGPT's consumer base, but they're now saying they can securely connect health information from sources such as Apple Health, other EHRs. They say they're FHIR compliant, and they're getting millions of queries every week. I believe I saw something like about a quarter of all queries to ChatGPT are actually health related. Understandably, it's a hard topic. People want to know. And I think even traditionally, you go into a doctor and you bring information and you have been a little bit poo-hooed. And it's been nice to see, not always, but that culture is changing slowly. But with that, we're also seeing OpenAI in hospitals and doing discharges with Palantir and AI systems and the uptick of agentic AI. So there's a lot of change at hand. What do you guys think of all these big systems and big tech companies going into health and consumer health?
It's a no-brainer for them as well. You know, it's very interesting to see the trend of that happening. So it's not just OpenAI. You know, you see Claude trying to go into health, Gemini going into health as well. Yeah. And I think it just boils down to the market forces on top of all of these large language model companies, these frontier lab companies, right? Like, all in all, up and down, month by month, a lot of these frontier-led companies perform the same, basically the same as well.
Yeah.
And slowly, that's why you're seeing that, you know, each of them are trying to find a way to a new vertical for them to grow in. And health, as you can tell with those stats, is one of them because the demand is there, the need is there. And honestly, you're right. You mentioned the paternalistic system. Like, it's been a paternalistic system in health for far too long. There has been an inequity of information between the doctor and the patient during the consultation as well. And really, that is such a right moment for this to change. So, you know, when Google came out, everyone was doing Dr. Googles and whatnot. And that was actually, you know, a very similar step in making sure that the patient base was getting more and more educated. Now we have Dr. ChatGPT, Dr. Claude, Dr. Gemini. And I think that is also an opportunity more than a threat to the health professionals as well, because now I'm seeing this day to day. Patients are coming in really very much more well-informed than they would be. So instead of a conversation, a consultation where I'm trying to explain what is type 2 diabetes to them, I'm actually discussing with them what lifestyle changes will work best with you.
It's accelerating that conversation, right?
Yeah. And what medications they would like to do and what are their goals are. And again, you know, we talk about my 15-minute consultation. Suddenly that has, you know, led to much meaningful and deeper conversations with my patients.
Can I put a different spin on it? I agree with everything. I think these frontier companies moving into health is going to be the single biggest thing that opens up health equity, because access to healthcare, especially into low middle income countries, if you're culturally and linguistically diverse, if you're rurally isolated, access has been one of the biggest challenges. And if your choice, you've basically got three choices, great care, good care, and no care. All of a sudden, this can polyfill all of the no care. Now, you've got an option which might not be great care, but do you really need great care, or is good enough for your purposes here? So I think from that regard, the consumer empowerment is huge. However, I think there's a big distinction between consumer-grade health and clinical-grade health. And that's where regulation steps in. And I think when you actually put regulation out there, it starts to separate out the people who are tinkering around the edges for mass consumer appeal but not signing up to the plate for accountability, and those who are taking health seriously. So if you look at the liability constraints of the frontier models, you could be impacted adversely by taking the advice of some of these things, and people already have been. The liability says, for some of them, I won't say which, you can do your own homework, it's limited to $100 or 12-month subscription cost, whichever is lesser.
Wow, interesting.
And now you think about the Medicare legal industry and what doctors sign up for. They put me through 6 years of university and then postgraduate training and then
it's never ending.
Annual registration and colleges with their boards and quality measures. And we take quality really seriously in healthcare. So I don't think we have the regulatory framework in place to establish the quality and safety, but that's going to follow really fast.
That makes sense, and a good framework to apply. Coming back to the big tech side of things, I'm just curious, obviously this is not medical advice, all that. What do you guys think of the current options out there? So obviously ChatGPT is going hard into consumer health. Gemini is a fascinating one because they've obviously got quite a lot of depth of expertise given their healthcare teams, AlphaFold, the interesting things they're doing in genomics and a whole bunch of other stuff. And then you've got Claude, who self-admittedly going super hard at bio and life sciences, even daring to enter drug discovery and EHR connection in the US. What do you guys think of these systems at the moment?
I think about risk and reward. So I work for a company that nominally became successful on the back of Scribe. You can create a Scribe on the weekend in your garage and you've got a Scribe.
Yeah.
And from a upside functionality perspective, wow, that's pretty good. You only see how robust these systems are on a bad day.
Yeah.
And I would question that, not did we pass the medical board exam, but down into the risk side of things, what are you doing from a guardrail perspective? What's your medical knowledge and content team look like? How are you thinking about adversarial prompt injection behavior? How are you doing post-market surveillance? All of that sort of stuff. And if you're not managing the downside risk, then I don't think any amount of upside value warrants that kind of behavior. I think health is too important to play fast and loose.
But it's interesting to see how the different frontier labs are also going in different directions as well. And I think this goes back to risk versus reward. I think increasingly we're starting to find that the cost of operating a frontier lab and large language model is becoming higher and higher and higher. Mm-hmm. And I think studying, you know, what you're seeing with those market trends is those frontier labs all going for their own special niche as well, which is really interesting to see how that would turn out. But I do have to say, though, the frontier lab that cracks that boundary of clinician and consumer trust, that is the frontier lab that wins. And I think, you know, health is the final frontier of how AI can percolate within civilization and society. Really getting really, really philosophical over here. Because if someone's willing to give you all their health information and trust you with all their health information and make predictions about their health and basically give AI a seat on the driver's, you know, a steering wheel for their own health as well.
Yeah, and life.
Correct. That's where that will be sort of the final frontier of civilization and AI.
Moving on very briefly, we're also looking at the future of healthcare in Australia, right? We've seen a lot of these products roll out. And with that, a lot of business models are being tested and changed. And a lot of businesses are making moves, in particular, health insurers and the likes of Bupa, who until recently, I wasn't quite aware of what was happening. Perhaps I was a bit ignorant, but there's been a lot of acquisitions of GP clinics, not just by Bupa, but a lot of other players. Everyone's looking at more innovative ways to extend care, getting into urgent care clinics. Janice, can you tell us a little bit about what's happening at Bupa and the latest moves there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Bupa is undergoing a metamorphosis from becoming just a health insurance company to a health organization. Now, think of it like West Farmers. You know, West Farmers has different verticals and different brands. Mm. Same thing with Bupa. We have Bupa Health Insurance, which is our what we're best known for. But we also have Bupa Health Services, which then owns the whole sort of slew of medical clinics, dental clinics and psychology clinics and optical clinics as well. Yeah. Now, this really goes to show that, you know, Bupa has had a vision that they want to invest as much as they can in primary and preventative care because they know that, you know, down the line, this will lead to a healthier population. And again, that's, you know, Bupa's motto, a healthier, happier society and a member base as well for them. So Bupa has really committed to investing in primary and preventative care. And they've been making huge investments in acquisitions and building greenfields for medical, dental, optical and psychology clinics as well. And, you know, this is really them putting their money where their mouth is in terms of making sure that, you know, as we are able to improve the general health of our population, that will also lead to better health outcomes as well.
Exciting. And it sounds like they're also doing a lot with tech and innovation, rolling out AI and figuring out how these health solutions, both like typical AI and even innovative solutions, like I know you're working with a lot of startups like More Good Days and Eugene for genetic testing and things like that. It sounds like an exciting place to be.
Absolutely. And I think that's where we recognize, you know, my team at Bupa, we deal with clinical innovation. So where we work not just for innovation for the customer, but also for the clinicians as well. Because as we become a health services company, it's really important that, you know, the clinicians are well empowered to be able to deliver the best care they can. And therefore, you know, one of our biggest sort of investments has been into AI scribes at this stage. You know, we're trying to make sure that every clinician in Bupa has access to an AI scribe so that, again, they can have those deeper, more meaningful conversations with their patients as well. We we talk about AI, but Bupa has a really sort of strong approach to AI. You know, we talk about the lack of regulation, especially in Australia, and that's where, you know, we're very fortunate that a company like Bupa, we have the right governance processes, the right policies, and the right teams to make sure that any sort of AI tools or any innovation that we roll out in Bupa remains safe and also effective.
Completely. It sounds like such an interesting evolution that Bupa and a lot of health insurers are undergoing at the moment. And it's an exciting change as well. Obviously, there's always pros and cons, but from, I guess, that more point in time care we were talking about to longitudinal care and people trying to, I guess, own more of that journey and create more of a consistent journey from both an experience perspective and I guess also realistically, everyone's a business at the end of the day, a business model perspective as well, potentially. Simon, you've been around in the Australian health scene for a long time and seen a lot of iterations. Can you speak to what you're sort of seeing in the change of the broader macro environment for the roles of these different organisations?
Thank you for not calling out how long I've been around for. I have been around for a long time. I remember once upon a time, the subsectors were really sharply delineated. So you had payer, provider, life sciences, med tech, retail health is probably another sector, and they were all really separate. Yeah. And then we had really distinct boundaries between acute care, primary care, aged care, and consumer health. because there is so much capability and reorientation, and digital has been a driver of that, the lines have become blurred between the segments. And you see the fastest change in the private sector. So the public runs the hospitals, and that's where you go when you have accident and trauma and the rest of things. But if you're a privately insured individual, you expect a degree of consumer orientation, and you want your services to come together, and you want to be digitally empowered by those tools. And just looking at the transformation that's happening at Bupa, I'm seeing it in other providers as well. I'm also seeing at a macro level, the Australian government recognising that the health system we have today is not the health system that we need for the future. And how do we drive that change through policy? And so what that means is we've got new models of care emerging. We saw the government leaned heavily into telehealth during COVID, but now home health and the whole Aged Care Act that is changing how we look after the aged and the disabled in our society. Yeah. There's a lot of compliance overhead, and the only way to do that is through technology. It's forcing a lot of consolidation. So there's acquisition and movement and aggregation.
Yeah.
We're in a period of the fastest flux I've ever seen.
Interesting. Exciting, but also mildly terrifying. But also, I suppose, no change happens without discomfort.
It's interesting as well, right? You talk about that longitudinal experience for the consumer, and I call them the customer at Bupa. And that sounds a little bit dirty when you talk about the customer and health, but actually it's really reframed the way I've thought about things as well. Because a customer is someone who has invested time, resources, and, you know, just their trust in being in this healthcare system as well. And we should be able to acknowledge that and treat them as such. So I'm going to use the word customer here. So we talk about the longitudinal experience for the customer, but we also need to talk about for the clinician as well. Because every single sort of pain point the customer has when it comes to working within a siloed healthcare system, I tell you the clinician also experience it as well. The amount of times as a GP, I am managing someone with a whole slew of multimorbidities, and I just don't have the information needed to make the right decision for the patient in front of me. And this is where I think AI can help that as well. It can help accelerate their chain, that transformation from before they walk into the consultation room, as they see me in the consult room, but also between instances of care as well. There is this huge potential for both the clinician and the customer experience to be, you know, connected.
Now, so for someone like Janice, AI turns her into an absolute weapon.
Yeah.
Because right now you've got judgment coming out the wazoo, but you don't have enough time.
Mm-hmm.
And AI gives you time to exercise the things that you do best, higher order judgment, empathy, being accountable, and so you can scale. It does have implications, though, for how we train the next generation.
It does.
Because you've developed that pattern recognition brain over many, many years and seeing it through. How do we do that for the next generation that has all of these tools at their fingertips?
I mean, it's a real risk, Dan. A bit of a funny story. So Simon and I were part of the same team in a debate a couple of weeks ago.
Ooh.
I think it's something about AI in medical school training. And the question was whether AI would make medical students be worse doctors or better doctors. And they thought it would be a good idea to put two of us on the side that said that AI was going to make us bad doctors. And it was really interesting because we really challenged our thinking. We are like probably the most pro AI doctors in Australia.
Who was on the other side? This is fascinating.
Amandeep was on our side.
Oh my gosh, digital health leaders.
Yes, and they got like academics to be on the side that said AI was going to make them better doctors as well. So it was a really fun debate. I think it really challenged our thinking as well. We lost, but that's... That's because we are, again, the most pro-AI doctors in Australia. But it was interesting because there is genuine risk with that, right? Mm-hmm. There is genuine risk with automation bias. And, you know, we've seen that, you know, we came up with studies which showed that, you know, gastroenterologists forgot how to do scopes once they like let the AI do scopes for them.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, it's incredible how much someone can de-skill if they use AI as a crutch too much as well.
You don't use it, you lose it, I suppose, right?
Absolutely. So there has to be a middle ground between making sure that we don't, you know, train a whole bunch of Luddite doctors and we train an AI-enabled, you know, new generation of doctors, but making sure that these doctors retain some of that higher level thinking we talked about, problem solving, pattern recognition, and really just that gestalt. I love that word, the clinical gestalt of knowing when something in your consultation room is actually a zebra instead of a horse.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thought exercise. I have thought about that recently because I've met a lot of medical students and I just tried to figure out how I would begin to navigate medical school with all this technology. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you learn those foundations really deeply that you need? And I suppose, what are the foundations you will need in the future really deeply versus being able to just check what is correct or evidence? So it'll be interesting to see how that changes that experience.
It's not just healthcare, it's entry-level jobs in our society in the era of AI. Because if I'm frank, when I think about my intern year, I was a human scribe.
Yeah.
I just follow around the consultants and the registrars and I'd write.
Are you saying we're not going to have interns anymore, Simon? What do you
The job of an intern is going to be different, isn't it? But it will be shadowing. That's how we train. It's a guild-like function and you learn on the job. But yeah, literally it was administration. You scribe and then you do discharge summaries and you rewrite med charts. That's what I did. And in doing so, I absorbed slowly the information I required to become a doctor. But we have these 4 and 5 year specialty programs. Could that be 2 year specialty programs with AI? Could we start to address some of the workforce challenges we've got by training people at an accelerated pace?
And going back to your point again, you know, we talk about, you know, societies where it's low to middle income, you know, those demographics where they have a choice between no care, good care, but not great care as well. You think about, you know, that democratization of information for them, would that lead to more people being able to access good care?
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting train of thought to think as well. And I do think, you know, it was really interesting. A year ago, we went to a couple of universities and we talked about, you know, how we could get AI into the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And their responses to us was, okay, so what would you like to take out of the curriculum? Because our curriculum's already full.
Literally.
And I thought that was maybe a little bit of a naive take on it as well, because AI is going to be part of the curriculum whether you like it or not for the medical student.
It is for they're integrating it themselves. If you're choosing not how to do it, then you're risking that going wherever.
So either you go against the revolution or you pick up your pitchforks and come along with them.
Mm.
I think about what I didn't learn in med school.
Yeah.
So I learned how to be a great clinician. Mm-hmm. Didn't learn anything about business.
Mm.
Didn't learn anything about management or leadership.
Yes.
I didn't learn anything about technology. And so I graduated as a strong clinician and then found out that the actual practicing reality required all these skills that I didn't have. And rather than kind of catch up properly, mm-hmm. I think all too often we take shortcuts and you see some really bad people management and bullying and mm-hmm. And leadership examples in healthcare. And by the same token, we're not really equipping the workforce to go out and be independent business owners to provide healthcare services.
And I love that as well. We talk about, you know, what you need to fit inside the curriculum in medical school. Often things like soft skills, like they fight very hard to find a place in the medical school curriculum. And sometimes you might, you know, come out with like a whole generation of doctors who are very smart clinically, mm. but may not necessarily have those soft skills in terms of being there for their patient, you know, managing, working together as a team. And there is an opportunity here, you know, if mm-hmm. AI can take some of those things for you, those heavy burden for you, can doctors have more of a chance to be more human?
Completely, completely. And that comes back to Heidi's original thesis, right? I believe when Tom and the co-founders founded it, it was supposed to be a clinical training assistant to help you with consultations and communication skills and catching clinical errors at OSCEs. So it's quite interesting to see the full evolution, and hopefully we'll get there soon, and it might be quicker than we all thought.
Well, we have actually gone back to clinical training as well. So in Heidi, using the evidence thing, you can say at the end of your week or at the end of your day, what are the cases that I don't commonly see and what might I be able to read up on from a CPD perspective? And it'll have a look back through your calendar and it'll say, you don't often see mental health or women's health, and these were the things that popped in your schedule this week. Here's a few articles and
huge.
Trying to be a better doctor.
That's so exciting. I feel like we covered a lot of ground there. Everything from consumers and customers voting with their dollars, the change of healthcare systems, the need for policy reform, to how do we train the next generation of healthcare professionals. It's a lot we could delve into, but we might need to press on into our final story of the day. So this is one of my favorites, I suppose, with my investor hat on. And obviously, we're all in health tech and love seeing what new exciting things are being built. So Rock Health's latest funding report found US $7.4 billion was invested this last half across 244 digital health funding rounds. That's just digital health, not even med tech, biotech and whatnot. It's up by about $1 billion from last year, which is seeing a nice recovery, given digital health went a little bit out of favor for a while. And while funding remains very healthy, the distribution is being very skewed just to a few companies with these mega rounds, of which we saw sort of Heidi raise a significant sum earlier, and we've seen a lot of others try discovery, open evidence. It's been quite interesting. But I suppose we've entered this world where AI is table stakes. It's quite hard to break into the market if you are an early stage AI company now, and you really need to find that wedge. I suppose, what, from your perspectives, is the new game for these companies who are trying to win trust or get distribution? What do they need to be doing, and what does this funding speak to about that?
So I think historically, in digital health, we're building systems for the enterprise, and the value proposition needed to land with the executives, especially the CIO. And then getting that in was a multi-year sales cycle and then deploy and sticky forever. I think we've rewritten the rules. AI has given us license to go directly to the end consumer and then figure out the rest of it. So this concept of, we have different layers. So there's systems of record, the back end, how do you treat the information? Systems of intelligence, how do you mash it up and get analytics? And then the systems of engagement now is an AI system of work. That's where the end user sits and the productivity tools they use and all of the rest of it. I think AI scribes have defined, but not forever, what that AI system of work for a clinician looks like. I think that's where the value sits. Think about the end user. Think about the challenges and constraints that they've got delivering their job. And as AI scribes commoditize, what's next? So we're seeing everyone run towards scribes, but come at it from their own angle. If you're an EHR, you're writing an AI scribe. Mm. You want a piece of that, and you don't want a third party out and partner for that business. If you're an AI scribe, you're thinking about, how do I layer in other value into my product? You take it to evidence, take it to communications, take it to revenue cycle management, take it wherever. If you're an evidence provider, unless you have distribution, which is clinicians using your tools already, maybe you need to layer in an AI scribe. So I'm actually finding that it's an anchoring framework at the moment, but not for in and of itself. It's all about, how do we capture eyeballs, time and attention. Whoever spends time and attention in that tool gives you distribution and license to be a first mover in how our system reorientates and transforms around artificial intelligence.
Highly agree. And, you know, I want to like delve in more into that value proposition as well. And I find that the best way to, the best way for companies and young startups to try to find that value proposition or their unique value prop for their product is to really work with the people working in this space as well. And that's why I've seen all the big raises from the big health tech and digital health companies in the last 6 months have been companies that have co-designed their solutions with the clinicians. Mm. I think it's got to the point now that even though your product might be for the end user consumer or the end user customer or for like a hospital or for like a carer, companies which co-design with a clinician from the get-go get it right. They're more likely to get it right. They're more likely to find their unique value proposition, their product market fit, and also the subsequent adoption as well of their product. So I do have to say that, you know, if you know any health tech companies out there, they're looking to delve into it. If you're not having a clinician in the room with you designing your healthcare product, what are you designing for?
Completely. And I think as we've all talked about, not just one clinician, but hordes. Like, you need a huge group and cohort to help really solidify your product offering and make sure it gets that product market fit.
Yeah, no, time and time again, I've seen products that come across my desk where it's created for the end user or for the carer, and it's a great product. But as a clinician, I see, as a GP, I look at it and see that this doesn't fit in the primary care system of Australia, and this wouldn't get funded in the primary care system of Australia. And so that, you know, you often see companies like that not, you know, progress further because, again, while they found their product market fit with the end user, they haven't found the product market fit with the system.
Completely. We've covered a lot of ground today. And I just want to try and bring together all these threads that we've sort of been talking about around the future of care, the companies creating it, the funding going behind it, who's going to win, how, what the clinician and patient experience is going to be like. If we fast forward to 2035 and we're in a healthcare clinic, don't worry, guys, we're not going to hold you to these answers. But what is a patient's journey like? Say I need to go and get a healthcare concern addressed. What would that experience look like for me as a patient and for a potential healthcare professional on that journey?
That is super cheeky to say 2035. There's a lot of change coming and it's hard to know what 2 years looks like, let alone 10 years.
I'm not even sure about next year, if I'm honest. So if it's hard.
2035, I'm going to go to Melbourne from Sydney. And so I'm going to jump in an autonomous vehicle rather than fly.
Nice.
That autonomous vehicle, I'll be a passenger in it. I can get stuff done. So I'm actually going to go sit in the wellness chair that's going to take all of my biometrics. I'm going to have a virtual consultation. That's the clinic that you're talking about that I go to. That'll be happening en route while I travel in my downtime, dead time. And while I'm in there, I might stop at a restaurant, and that's where I'm going to get my food along the way. I'm going to have my retail experience in there with immersive, dress myself and have a look and finish the transaction.
Very nice.
And I won't have a hotel bill at the end of it because I'll be able to sleep in that car on the way, and I'll arrive fresh and early for business tomorrow. I'm thinking about that because I just travelled back from Melbourne yesterday and I spent 2 hours sitting on the tarmac on a plane seat, absolute dead time. I think consumer health will drive changes in our health system. Mm. And I think they'll come in bits and pieces and fits and starts. But I'd like to think that in 9 years, someone who's thinking about the end-to-end patient journey will stitch it together and provide a superior experience. Now, for us living in an affluent society with private, high rates of private health insurance, it's almost utopian. There's a lot more to delivering healthcare around the world, but I think good care is going to get great.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to these autonomous vehicles finally making their way here and being a part of healthcare.
I mean, it's there already, isn't it? Like, it's there in the US already. And, you know, Tesla has the FSD, the full service driving as well. So it's not too far away. It's not too far fetched. So look, my 2035 vision for healthcare is, you know, AI scribes won't be the only AI tool in the consultation room. AI agents everywhere, but a principled approach where the clinicians are able to deliver the right care, have access to the right information at the right time to help them and the patient make the right decision together. Mm. And the patient, the customer, they feel heard, they feel listened to, and they feel less alone in their health journey.
Amazing. More human.
More human.
Better healthcare. And more self-driving vehicles that monitor our biometrics at all time. Amazing. All right, guys. Well, last but definitely not least, we're going to do a really quick rapid fire. Don't overthink it. Just answer first things that come to mind. So first, what's both of your favorite emojis?
Thank you. My thank you emoji on Slack. I use it all the time.
Is that like a literal thank you or like the praying?
So there is the pray. But there's also a custom little thank you rainbow that I think is just wonderful. I use it all the time.
Very cute.
My overuse emoji is the parrot emoji, the one that's dancing like this.
Party parrot.
That's amazing. Everything in my Teams channel, because they have it on Teams as well, has the party parrot emoji.
I haven't seen a party parrot in ages. That's an excellent one. Need to bring it back. What's been the biggest surprise for you this fortnight? Healthcare or otherwise?
I love learning from our customers and their stories. So I think one of the wonderful things about Heidi is we put a product out there, people use it, then they tell us how they use it. There was a story from aged care that I found really poignant. We have an ambient scribe. It's meant to listen in real time, write notes. In aged care with English as a second language, we've got people from different nationalities providing the care, then dictating after the fact in their own language, and an English note comes out the back.
How?
I thought that was cool, because that's our product being used in a way that we never intended, but it addresses a need.
That is so cool. I love that. Pleasant surprise.
The other thing for me is that, you know, we had that webinar where we had a bunch of, you know, EMRs, you know, show their future roadmaps to GPs. And then, you know, at the end of the webinar, the GPs are all like, you know, let's make our own EMR. Let's vibe code with our own EMR. Let's make it an AI end-to-end workflow EMR. And it just goes to show again, you know, often surprises me how innovative GPs are. And I think that's incredible.
Love it. I'm sure we're just seeing the start of it too. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick one company or innovation to watch, what would it be? You can't say your own business, by the way.
Yeah. I'm just wrapped by Claude and Anthropic. It hits in a real way because AI is not just a reactive chatbot anymore. Agentically, you can drive and operate all sorts of things. Every day I'm stunned by what it's able to do. So that's my AI platform of choice.
Look, it's not AI, but it's actually genomics. So I do think that, you know, the technology around genomics has really been democratized. You know, tests, you know, pharmacogenomics tests that were, you know, $2,000, you know, 8 years ago, they're now $160 off the, you can buy it online as well. And I think that is, you know, really goes to show how far the technology has gone with it, but also how accessible it's now become. And now, you know, recently you've seen like, you know, the parliament passed by a legislation where, you know, life insurers cannot discriminate people based on their genomic results, genetic results. And, you know, we are just going to see a higher demand for more, you know, consumer demand for them wanting to know more about their genetic profile.
Completely. Oh, I'm also fascinated by genomics. Awesome choice. It feels like we're really just getting started too with the ties. Like we don't really understand how they interplay with a lot of diseases. Some we do, but much more to discover. And it's going to be awesome to see that unfold. Last but not least, what is one of your favorite resources, whether it's a podcast, book, Netflix show?
We're going to say what the health, right? I know.
Woo-hoo! Woo!
The newsletter, but also I've actually clawed myself. I'm going to expose my secrets here. A little bit of a Janus update for me. So I do have a weekly digest that Claude provides to me about the latest news and also the so what it is for what for me as a GP, for me leading clinical innovation as well. And so that's something I've actually, again, and, you know, large language models, you know, really increasing the opportunity and scope for me, empowering me to, you know, stay abreast about all this global updates as well. So I would say one of my own creations on Claude.
Oh, yeah.
We've been doing a lot of impact research of use of our technology in various regions. Just pulling all that together and seeing what the common demand, common categories are, I've found that really interesting. That's a point in time. It'll be interesting to see how that changes.
Very cool. Very cool. I look forward to following how things evolve, and I might have to try get my hands on Janice GPT over here. Well, thank you both for your time and incredible chats. As always, I feel like we could go on all day, and I look forward to revisiting this in a few months and seeing what we've undoubtedly gotten wrong. But I'm excited to see the future of health unfold and the great things you're both doing in shaping that. It's safe to say that the takeaway from today is that AI is table stakes, and we're going to see awesome things evolve across the entire healthcare life cycle with lots of changes coming. And it's going to improve the experience for patients, clinicians, and hopefully businesses too. Thanks for joining us today, guys. That's all for our second episode of the What the Health Wrap. I hope you enjoyed it. We are new, so please give us feedback. If you liked it, like, subscribe, share it with someone else who might actually like it too. And otherwise, we'll catch you next time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.